In the quiet town of Ada, Oklahoma, Ron Williamson seemed destined for greatness. A natural baseball talent with a $50,000 signing bonus from the Oakland Athletics in 1971, about $340,000 today, Ron was Ada's golden boy. But when his baseball career crumbled due to injuries and poor performance, his life spiraled into mental illness and alcoholism. By 1982, he was sleeping on his mother's couch, haunted by voices and delusions that his baseball career would be revived. That December, 21-year-old Debbie Carter was brutally raped and murdered in her apartment. The crime scene was horrific. She had been sexually assaulted, suffocated with a washcloth, and strangled. The killer had written obscene messages on her body with nail polish and ketchup. 5 years later, despite no physical evidence connecting them to the crime, Ron Williamson and his friend Dennis Fritz were arrested. What followed was a textbook case of justice gone wrong, one that would eventually inspire John Grisham's only nonfiction book and raise profound questions about our criminal justice system. Imagine being sentenced to death for a nightmare you didn't create. How do you convict innocent men? Start with jailhouse informants seeking deals. Add questionable dream confessions. Mix in dubious hair analysis presented with false scientific certainty. Then ignore exculpatory evidence and alternative suspects. The case against Ron and Dennis relied on testimony from Terry Holland, who claimed Ron confessed in jail. Jurors never learned Holland blamed Ron for her sister's suicide years earlier. Against Dennis, prosecutors used semi-literate inmate James Harjo, who alleged Dennis tearfully admitted, "We didn't mean to hurt her." The scientific evidence came from analyst Melvin Hett, who testified crime scene hairs were microscopically consistent with Ron and Dennis's, despite hair analysis being notoriously unreliable. The prosecution concealed Ricky Joe Simmons' confession to killing Debbie Carter and withheld a 1983 videotaped interview where Ron repeatedly denied involvement. Most damning, fingerprint expert Jerry Peters confirmed none of the 21 crime scene prints matched either man. Yet, in April 1988, both were convicted. Dennis received life imprisonment, Ron got death. "I am innocent! I am innocent!" Ron's screams echoed through F-cell house at McAllister Prison until his voice gave out. His 16-by-7-foot cell became both sanctuary and torture chamber. The monotony crushed him, sleeping, reading, smoking, with nothing to anticipate except cold meals. Ron's mental health collapsed. Diagnosed with multiple disorders, including depression and schizophrenia, he paced his cell reciting Simmons' confession and his trial transcript. He flooded his cell, stripped naked, and did belly flops from his bunk while yelling incoherently. He destroyed his television and cherished guitar against the bars. By 1989, he began cutting his wrists, attempting suicide repeatedly, and once set fire to his mattress. He wrote desperate letters describing how he banged his head against concrete. Guards tormented him through the intercom, pretending to be God, Debbie Carter, or her father. After 6 years on death row, Ron's execution was set for September 27, 1994. His sisters planned a private service in McAllister, refusing to have his body displayed in Ada. Just 5 days before his scheduled execution, Judge Frank C. granted a stay, troubled by the weak evidence and dream confession references. While Ron deteriorated in prison, transferred to a psychiatric unit with mouth cancer, dedicated advocates fought for both men. Mark Barrett took Ron's case, while the Innocence Project championed Dennis Fritz. In 1999, DNA testing excluded both men as sources of crime scene semen samples. Further testing revealed that 14 of 17 hairs were inconsistent with either man's DNA. The evidence pointed to Glenn Gore, the very man who had initially implicated Ron to police. At the exoneration hearing, OSBI's Mary Long testified that none of the crime scene hairs matched either man, contradicting her crucial 1988 testimony. Though prosecutor Bill Peterson acknowledged prosecution was impossible, he offered no apology for their 12 years of wrongful imprisonment. On April 15, 1999, both men walked free. Have you ever wondered what it feels like to lose everything, then get a second chance when it's almost too late? Freedom brought its own challenges. Ada remained hostile. Ron's family church refused to host a reception, and Peterson continued making threatening statements in the newspaper. The media was captivated by their story, particularly Ron's, a white man wrongfully convicted by an all-white system, his baseball career derailed, and his mental decline on death row. Their $100 million lawsuit settled for several million dollars in 2002. Dennis invested wisely, while Ron spent his portion at strip clubs and bars, unable to escape his prison-amplified demons. In 2003, Glenn Gore was finally convicted of the murder. By fall 2004, Ron's health deteriorated rapidly. Diagnosed with cirrhosis, likely accelerated by prison medications, he was given 6 months to live. His body withered, except for his swollen midsection. Remarkably, Ron harbored no bitterness, eventually forgiving everyone, including Bill Peterson. On December 4, 2004, just 5 years after his exoneration, Ron Williamson died at age 51. His tombstone reads, "Ronald Keith Williamson, born February 3, 1953, died December 4, 2004. Strong survivor, wrongly convicted in 1988, exonerated April 15, 1999. John Grisham discovered Ron's story through a New York Times obituary 2 days after his burial. After contacting Ron's sisters, his investigation revealed wrongful convictions occurring monthly across America due to bad police work, junk science, flawed eyewitness testimony, and prosecutorial misconduct. Grisham uncovered other troubling Ada cases, including Calvin Lee Scott's wrongful rape conviction based on hair evidence from the same investigators and prosecutor. Scott served 20 years before DNA exonerated him in 2003. Tommy Ward and Carl Fontenot, convicted based on dream confessions, remain imprisoned with no DNA evidence to potentially free them. The financial impact was severe. While the state paid Ron and Dennis's defense attorneys only $3,600 each and denied funds for forensic experts, Ada taxpayers twice raised property taxes to pay for lawsuit settlements, ironically burdening Debbie Carter's family members, among others. Ron Williamson's story warns of systemic failures. Jailhouse informants, prosecutorial misconduct, inadequate defense funding, junk science, and mistreatment of mentally ill defendants. Since The Innocent Man was published, the Innocence Project has exonerated over 375 wrongfully convicted people, including 21 from death row. The average exoneree served 14 years before clearing their name. When convenience trumps truth, we betray both the wrongfully convicted and victims whose actual perpetrators remain free. Ron lost his freedom, health, and ultimately his life to a system valuing conviction rates over justice. His story demands improvements, expanded DNA testing access, recorded interrogations, reformed eyewitness procedures, and accountability for prosecutors who conceal evidence. Remember Ron Williamson when you hear about convictions based on jailhouse confessions or scientific certainty. True justice protects the innocent, and ensuring this begins with demanding better.